Good morning. Today's daf in Makos is Chaf Aleph. We're in Chaf Amud Beis. We are starting with the words Hamakipas Rosho. We are on the Mishnah Makos dealing with various the sermon in the Torah regarding cutting of one's hair and beard. There's two sermon in the Torah. There are two separate sermon in the Torah. One is for cutting one's payas, and the other one's for cutting one's beard. Basically, the way to look at the head of a person is that really it's a juncture of two points. It's really the skull and it's really the jaw. So in terms of the skull's concern, so that's your head. So the Torah says regarding the head, you're not allowed to cut off your pasarosh. You're not allowed to be to remove the corners of your head. The corners of your head, meaning if you can draw a line from the top of your ear to the to your forehead, so that area over there is referred to the pasarosh, the corners of your head. So if you were to cut specifically that area and now smooth out that area so that it looks like basically you got a bowl cut, so that is an issur in the Torah, and that's a violation. As opposed to the face, so we learned yesterday in the Mishnah that there is pa'as zakan. There are the corners of the beard. The corners of the beard are, the Torah prohibits one from cutting them off as well. When it comes to the corners of the beard, a couple of interesting points that we made yesterday that I'm just going to quickly review today. When it comes to the corners of the beard, so first of all, the identification. The Mishnah tells us that there are five corners to the beard. That's all the information we get out of the Mishnah. Even the Gemara itself is really really scarce in terms of the amount of information that it gives. The Gemara just simply says that they're corners. We're going to see later this morning, Rav Sheshis actually shows the shear where they are. So if we were sitting in shear together with Rav Sheshis, that would have been very helpful. But considering the fact that we are reading Rav Sheshis, and there's no pictorials, so it kind of doesn't help us much. So where exactly are the corners of the beard? So the Rishonim deliberate this very issue. The Rivan I went over yesterday has the five corners of the face, where the first two corners are where basically the jaw takes a turn towards the chin, meaning go down the sideburns and head to where now basically it's, I don't know the angle, but basically when that jaw makes that turn, so that's your corner. Obviously you have two cheeks, so that's, corners one and two. Then go towards the chin as the jaw is making the turn from the towards the cleft of the chin. So those are corners three and four. And then the point of the chin, the mantle, that's corner number five. So those are the five corners according to the Rivan. Rabbeinu Chanan has a different position in terms of what the corners are. And Rashi, interestingly enough, Rashi not here because here it's not Rashi anymore. Here it's Rivan commenting. So Rashi in the Gemara Shavuos has even a different opinion as well. The Rush already writes, this is, he's a Rishon, he's still a Rishon. The Rush already writes that we really don't have clarity in terms of where the five corners are. So the Rush says that a Yerush Shemaim should not take a razor and apply it to his face for fear that he may be crossing over one of the five corners. So that's the, and in terms of, more information and more navigation in terms of where the razor can go. So seek guidance from your local Rav. But that's the basic, an attempt of explaining where the five corners are. Just one last point, which from yesterday, in terms of the pas rosh, in terms of the corners of the head, so the Torah says you're not allowed to cut them off. Now with the face, as we saw yesterday and we're going to see again today, Torah is very clear, it has to be with a razor. Meaning that if you cut with scissors, that's fine. Meaning the corners of your face, the Torah not only tells you in theory, the Torah tells us where they are, and the Torah also tells us how one is not allowed to cut them off, meaning with a razor. But if you take a pair of scissors, so that would be fine, which is why many have the practice of cutting with a shaver, meaning a shaver has a scissor action, and therefore that would be fine. Again, I oversimplified this. It gets a little bit more complicated than that. You'll seek guidance, rabbinic guidance as well for there as well. But anyway, but the shaver is a scissor action, that's fine. What about the pas rosh? What about the corners of the head? So there, it's not clear. Meaning, the Rishonim already debate whether or not, certainly with a razor it would be a problem. That goes without saying. But in other words, what about scissor action? Meaning, what if I cut the payos really close, but I don't do it with a razor, I do it with scissor action? So that is also another machlokus amongst the Rishonim. The Rambam and the Rush to debate this issue. And the Shulchan Aruch says one should be machmir. The Shulchan Aruch already writes this, that one should be machmir, when the pas rosh, with the corners of your head, you shouldn't get a close cut with the corners of your head. Okay, that's a basic outline of what we saw yesterday. And the last point that we ended off with yesterday is how many hairs to remove. So we had a discussion, in terms of various shiurim. And then the Gemara ended off yesterday. This is the last point we made yesterday, that if it is one white hair amongst a lot of black hairs, so then it would be a twofold problem. One problem would be that even if you subscribe to normally the rule being shtei sa'aris, you need to remove two hairs, but here, because that one white hair is so significant to you, so therefore its removal may constitute both a prohibition and also, we discussed yesterday, maybe even Chilul Shabbos as well. I'll take out the word maybe. The Gemara says it is Chilul Shabbos. On top of that, the Gemara says there's another area of halacha that one needs to be concerned about, and that is Yilbash Gever Silmas Isha. That if a man is removing a white hair amongst black hairs to basically make himself look younger, so that's something that typically is done by women, and so therefore you'd be in violation of the Isra in the Torah of Lo Yilbash. And we touched on that very quickly yesterday. Right. In other words, he wants to look older.
Yes.
Okay, it's a good question. It's an excellent question. I don't know. So with all that stated, that is a quick summary of what we saw. We're now continuing. We're on Chaf Amud Beis. We're halfway down the Amud. It's the two dots. Hamakif Pas Rosho V'chule. Tan Rabban Pas Rosho. Sof Rosho. So the Pas Rosho is referring to the Sof Rosho. So somehow the Bryce feels that that's better clarification. Okay, and it could be meaning, you know, maybe they didn't have super clarity on the word Pas, so then they went to the word Sof and somehow that cleared the matter. Again, it's what we described earlier this morning. We're talking about the sideburn area. So Sof Rosho, Ve'ezu Sof Rosho, Zeh Mashrot Sadav La'achare Azno U'lepadachto. So what we described earlier here, the Gemara says very clear, and that is that we're talking about the Pas Rosh. We're talking about now the leveling off of the hair so that the area right above the ear to the front of the forehead is evened off. Tanatana Kibbutz Rav Chista, the following brisa was said over in front of Rav Chista. Echad Amakiv, Echad Anikiv Lokem. Who's going to be subject to Malkus? So, imagine now we're in the barbershop. We have a Jew being the barber. We have a Jew sitting down and receiving the haircut. And the brisa says they both are going to be subject to Malkus. Meaning, in a scenario where the barber just lopped off the payas, he cut him off. So then he's gonna be subject to Malkus, and also the guy sitting in the chair is gonna be subject to Malkus as well. Now, the guy lopping off the payas is gonna be subject to Malkus, it's easy. Meaning because that he violated the Isra in the Torah and he did so biyadayim. He did so actively. So I understand why he's gonna get Malkus, but the guy sitting in the chair. So granted that he should have given instruction, and granted he should have said, no, don't do it. All that's true, but he didn't do anything. In other words, he was a passive participant in the act. And we have said time and again throughout this Masechta, a lav shein bo ma'aseh, that you are a passive participant in the act. What you did, we could label it wrong, that's fine. But in other words, you're not going to get Malkus. Malkus is only for actively violating the Torah. So the Gemara, so Amar le mandach, otamar ba'av le lake. So he says to him, the person sitting and eating dates from a basket is going to get Malkus. Obviously an expression, meaning what in the world did he do wrong? The guy sitting in the chair. So, okay, you and I just went over. He did a number of things wrong in terms of allowing this to happen. But in terms from a Malkus perspective, there's no reason why the guy sitting in the chair should be getting Malkus. He didn't do anything. He didn't actively do anything. I wouldn't even use the terminology. He's passive. In other words, for Malkus, you need to be active. All this is important information, but for Malkus, you have to do something. It has to be an action. The guy sitting in the chair didn't do anything. So the Gemara says, "Amalach mani Rabbi Yehudi, Amalav Shem b'Maisa Lokin Alav." So the Gemara now has a couple suggestions of how to understand the Brisa. One possibility, says the Gemara, is that the author of the Brisa is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, as we've seen already a number of times through this Masechta, is of the opinion that Alav Shem b'Maisa, you're going to get Malkus. So if this Brisa subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda, that explains how both the barber and the guy sitting in the chair is going to get Malkus. Rava Amar b'Makif La'atzmo v'Divrei Hakol. Now Rava says that Makif La'atzmo gives himself a haircut, which now actually presents a big chiddush. Meaning, so you're giving yourself a haircut, and now what? So now you're the makif and you're the nikaf. And therefore, you're going to get two sets of makos. Right, now that's a tremendous chiddush. Meaning that you are both acting and receiving the Isser Torah. And because you are now active on both sides of the equation, so therefore you're going to get makos for both. There's an Isser for both, you're going to get makos for both. Rav Ashi Amar b'Mesayev v'Divrei Hakol. Now Rav Ashi says, well, maybe we could say it like this. The guy sitting in the chair wasn't just sitting there and perhaps even falling asleep. I don't want to, you know, tell tales about myself, but I've known once or twice to be sitting in the chair and, you know, get tapped on the shoulder when it's over. Okay, the haircut's done. Okay, great. Thank you. So I make for a great conversationalist. So the but what the Gemara now is describing is that the guy in the chair is not just sitting there and receiving a haircut, but Messiah, he's being of some sort of aid, he's being of some sort of assistance. What exactly is he doing? So the Rivan doesn't write a whole lot over here. Mazmin hasa'aros lamakif. I'm reading the Rivan. So basically what he does is he lifts up his hair so that the hair can get cut. So he facilitates the haircut. He makes it easier for the barber in order to cut his hair. Okay, and that obviously presents a chiddush, meaning that even though he didn't do the actual cutting, all he did was an assist, but in this regard, an assist is enough in order to incur the malchus liability and the malchus punishment. Admittedly, that's a chiddush, but that's exactly what the Gemara, that's exactly what Ravashi is introducing over here, that when you're Messiah in this regard, so you're going to get malchus. Hamashchis pa'adzikano, we are now describing the beard. Okay, so again, like I said in the beginning of Shir today, they are two separate Isurim. Pa'as Rosh is the sideburn area. The pa'adzikan is the facial area. So there's an Isur in the Torah to remove the corners of your beard. So Tanur Rabban pa'adzikano, sovzikano. Again, the Braisa says the same thing as well. It's basically where you're going to find corners in the face. The sof, the I don't want to say the edges, but basically the corners. And again, for slight more clarity on the matter, just slightly, so the Gemara describes it as a shibolos. Now, shibolos, again, to you and I, it doesn't do much in terms of helping us understand where the corners are, but from the Gemara's perspective, from the Bryce's perspective, it was somewhat more illustrative. Okay. Hamisarit srita achas. We are now talking about making a serration. There's an issue in the Torah, which we briefly touched on yesterday, which the Gemara is going to go into a little bit more today, and that is that if somebody loses a loved one, and over the grief and anguish that he's experiencing right now, he actually makes serrations, so one is going to be subject to a law in the Torah. Tanur Rabban v'seret yachol afilu, seret al-beiso, shenafal v'asvin aso, shetava b'yam. What if, let's say, you experience other losses, financial losses, and you make serrations in your body? So are you going to be subject to malchus tamalam la nefesh? Eino chayv ela al ha-meis bovad. So the chiv comes about only for the mace, not for the other actions. We can add to the Gemara's point and simply say that you're not going to get malchus if you do so, but from a hashkafic standpoint, in other words, it's, you know, I don't want to go so far as to say aser, although that may be true. I'm not sure, but certainly hashkafically, from a hashkafic standpoint, meaning that you should be mekabel, meaning the idea that you're going to be so anguished over over financial loss that you're cutting your body in order to do so. So hashkafically, certainly it's not right. It's, you know, it's not you're not accepting Hakadosh Baruch Hu's hashkacha. But in terms of receiving the malchus is only going to be received if you do so over the loss of a loved one. What if you make five serrations in your body over the same mace? But in other words, you're so destroyed, you just keep cutting yourself. Five times over, you're going to receive five sets of malchus. Tamalamer visarat. The Torah says that for every srita that you do, you're going to be chayv malchus, even if that srita is over the same mace. L'chayv akol srita v'srita. Rabbi Yossi omer minan l'mesaret srita achas al hei mesim shu chayv akol achas v'achas. Let's say a person lost five, and then he does one srita, but he has in mind all five. Is that going to be subject to five malchus? So Rabbi Yossi says yes. Tamalomar la nefesh. L'chayv akol nefesh v'nefesh. So for every person you have in mind when you're doing the srita, and even though you're doing one srita, but you have multiple people in mind, you're going to be chayv for every one of them. Now, v'afik to l'beiso, shenafal l'sfinaso, shetava v'yam. Now, the Gemara says, technically speaking, small problem, and that is that we already use that pasuk for the previous drasha, meaning that the malchus only comes about for loss of life, not for financial loss, and we learned it from the word l'nefesh. So what we seem to be doing right now is double dipping, using the same pasuk to learn two different halachas. So, kasavu Rav Yossi, srita v'gdida achasi. Rav Yossi is of the opinion that srita and gdida are the same. Now, what the Gemara here is making reference to is as follows. There really are two psukim in the Torah that detail this prohibition of cutting yourself. One is in Vayikra and Parshas Emor, and the other one is in Parshas Re'eh. The one in Parshas Emor, lo yikrchu karcha b'roshom afaz dekanim lo yigalechu vivsaram lo yisritu sarata. So the one in in Emor deals with Srita. However, if you go to Parshas Re'eh, so you're going to find over there, the Torah uses the word Gedida, or Los is Godidu. So, which one is referring to what? So, if you take a look at take a look at the Rivan on the top of the Amud, so he points out the following. The Ksiba Gedida Lameis Lotis Godidu Los Asimu Karcha. Not that Rivan. Yeah, next Rivan. There we go. Hamisari Bikli Chayev. I know this Rivan is on the upcoming Gemara, but I'm just using it right now to make the following point. Havan Pshita Lekule Amad Iker Gedida Mashma Bikli Veiker Srita Mashma Biyad. The Rivan says, "Look, we're all in agreement that when you say the word Gedida, you do mean to make a serration in your body, but Gedida is typically the best definition of the word Gedida is using an instrument." On the other hand, srita, the best definition of srita is to make a serration using your hand, probably your fingernails. But in other words, the gedita and srita both mean serration, and if you want a proper definition, so gedita is with an instrument and srita is with your hand. That's the best definition. Rav Yossi is of the opinion, now we'll go back to our Gemara. Now Rav Yossi is of the opinion that that's true, meaning he agrees with that point, but when the Torah prohibits srita, it actually prohibits both. Meaning the word srita, even though it has a proper definition, it actually includes serration both with a hand and with an instrument. And when the Torah prohibits gedida, even though the proper definition is with an instrument, it actually prohibits both a kli and your hand. That means, according to Rav Yossi, that when you make a serration in your body, whether you do so with a hand or whether you do so with an instrument, you're violating both prohibitions, both the prohibition of srita and the prohibition of gedida. And so the Gemara says, so if that's true, so now we have a repetition of the psukim, and that means that according to Rav Yossi, it allows us now to have an extra drasha. I know that was a little, you know, it was a little complicated, but that's basically how the Gemara's thought process over here. So Kasav Rav Yossi, we're on the very top of Chafal and Vamad Alf. Kasav Rav Yossi, srita v'gedida achasi, uksiv hasam lameis. Srita and gedida are the same, meaning they're both inclusive of hand and instrument. And so therefore, now that we have basically a repetition, so what do we do with that extra one? We darshan out that it is the makas only is for the dead, not for financial loss. Amr Shmuel. Hamasar b'kli chayev. If one does a srita using a instrument, he's going to be chayev. Meisvei. The Gemara challenges with a brace of srita gedida achasi. Elisha srita b'yad gedida b'kli. So in the brisa tells us that srita is only violated when done with your hand. Gedida is only violated when done with the kli. Meaning this brisa clearly separates the two. Not like what we said just a moment ago. That srita and gedida are really one and the same. This brisa clearly works with the assumption that to violate the pasuk of srita, you have to make a serration with your hand. And to violate gedida, you have to make a serration with an instrument. So the Gemara says, so now, Shmuel made the statement that if you do sirut, and you do so with your hand, you're going to be chayev. So the Gemara says very simply, yeah, you're right. Hu damar ka Rav Yossi. Shmuel subscribes to the viewpoint of Rav Yossi. And again, Rav Yossi says that these terms are synonymous. Tani tana kama de Rav Yochanan. Al meis ben biyad ben bikli chayev. If you make a serration in your body, whether you do so with an hand or with an instrument, you're going to be chayev. So Rav Yochanan subscribes to the idea we just presented, that they're both going to be violations of the Torah. Okay. Al avodas kochavim. Now, let's say you make a serration in your body, not over the loss of life, but in other words, for avodah zarah. So biyad chayev b'kli patur. So here it makes a distinction, and the original way the brace is presented is that if you do so with your hand, you're going to be liable, but if you do so with an instrument, you're going to be exempt. So the Gemara says, v'ayib chaksiv. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. We have a pasuk, not even a brisa, a pasuk that says just the opposite. So Eliyahu b'har Carmel, so he's together with the Nevi Abal, so they're challenging each other, who can get their God to accept the karban. So Eliyahu was banking on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Nevi Abal were banking on Baal, on their idol. And so in the course of them trying to petition their God, so v'yiz go to do kimishpatam b'charavos of ramachim. So they do gedida, and they're obviously doing it for the purposes of idolatry. And the pasuk says very clearly that they're using instruments. they're using weaponry in order to cut themselves. Clearly from the pasuk, the word gedida for avodah zarah is exclusively with a kli. The Gemara says, okay, now we know the pasuk. We're going to have to go back and we're just going to revisit the brisa. And yes, we're going to edit the brisa. Ela'ema biyad pata b'kli chayef. So, just flip around the end of the brisa. When making a suration for avodah zarah, you do so with a hand. You're going to be pata. You're going to do so with an instrument. You're going to be chayef. Okay. Continuing in the Mishnah v'chayev ala rosh machmir Rav Sheshes bein pirkei reishin. So Rav Sheshes demonstrates to everyone the edges of your head. Okay. So again, that was great for the demonstration. Okay. For us, it doesn't help much, but this is the Gemara where Rav Sheshes clearly is demonstrating where it is. And once again, Rav Sheshes shows everybody, you know, the zakan, in Aramaic, the zayin and the dalal interchangeable. Great little trick in terms of deciphering some Aramaic. You know, obviously, it doesn't help that much, but like you see the word dikna, so you take the dalal, you replace it with the zayin, so zakan is zakan in Hebrew. So anyway, so he showed the corners of his beard. So again, for the demonstration of Sheshes, that was great. You know, for the rest of us, we're still, you know, trying to figure out which corners are, where are the corners of the face. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Imnatlan Kasavra Chad Lavu. Now, in terms of how many malchus you're going to get if you cut all five corners of the face, so you remember the Tanakam and the Mishnah said, so you're going to receive five malchus. Meaning that if with a razor you hit all five corners, so you're going to get five sets of malchus. Much like in the Mishnah, regarding the Pas Rosh, if you cut off the two payos, so you're going to get two sets of malchus, right? And the Rivan back in the Mishnah, we mentioned this briefly yesterday, the Rivan in the Mishnah said that they are segregated malchus. Even though it's on one head, it's on one body. And the Rivan went so far to say, even if you removed it at the same time, but because they're in different areas of the head and face, so therefore they're separate malchus. Okay, that's the opinion of the Tanakhama. Meanwhile, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that if you shave them off in one shot, you're only going to receive one set of malchus, not five sets of malchus. And the Gemara says that he feels that they're one lav as opposed to five different lavim. Ve'enu chayev ad she'ilana betar. Now, in terms of the face, you only violate the Torah when you cut it off with a razor. So again, over here, what the Gemara is doing is playing off two psukim that describe the cutting off the corners of your face. One is in Emor, and the other is later on in Parshas Kedoshim. In Emor, I'm just reading the psukim inside first. Lo yikuchu karcha b'rosham ufa'az dekadam lo yigalechu uvisaram lo yisrutu sarata. So, the pasuk in Emor, it says, ufaz dekanam lo yigalechu giluach. Then, move ahead a little bit forward, sorry, move back a little bit in Vayikra, Parshas Kedoshim, lo sakifu paz roshechem velo sashchis es paz dekanecha. So here where the Torah also talks about the cutting of the beard, but the Torah uses the word hashchata, which means destruction. So basically what we're going to do now is we're going to bridge the difference between the giluach mentioned back in Emor versus the hashchata mentioned back in Kedoshim. So, Tara Rabbanan. Ufaz dekadam lo yigalecho yachol afilu gilchu b'misparayim. So for the beard and the corners of the beard, perhaps the Isser in the Torah is cutting with the scissors. Yehei chayv tamalamer lo sashchis. So the Torah says no, because the other pasuk describes it as a destruction. Ilo tashchi yachol imlakta b'malaki v'rihini. So destruction, so what if I cut it with malaki v'rihini? As I mentioned yesterday, Rishonim debate exactly what they are. So the Rivan and Rashi say that they're different instruments used by the carpenter. I mentioned yesterday, using carpenter instruments as a means of hair removal from your face, it sounds extraordinarily unpleasant. The Rambam describes these things as more like tweezers. Whatever the case is, it's not a razor. Okay? That little we could say. So in other words, so what if I take out the beard hair by hair with tweezers? Okay, I'll say it like the Rambam. So yehi chayv tamalam lo yigalechu. No, the Gemara says it has to be a shave. It has to be a shaving action. So basically it has to be both destructive and a shaving action. What provides, what satisfies both? So haketsa giluch sheish bashchata haviam zetar. It's a razor. Meaning that the only time that you prohibit, you're violating the Torah when it comes to your beard is only when cutting with a razor. Because that razor provides both the shaving action and the destruction action. But if you're cutting with scissors, so then it's not a violation of the Torah. And again, this brings us, this point of the Gemara brings us to the part of shavers. Shavers provide a really close shave, even though it's a scissor action. So the poskim deal with that. And if you want guidance on that, once again, I direct you to your local Rav to talk about shavers. Rabbi Eliezer, Amar Afilu Lakta B'Malaka V'Rihid Nichayev. Now, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says that if you cut your beard, not with a razor, but in other words, but, again, I'm just going to say tweezers. It's just easier to say it. It's easier for me to visualize. So if you take off your beard with tweezers, so again, according to the Tanna Kamma, you didn't violate the Torah. According to Rabbi Eliezer, you did. So, manafshach, I gamar gzera shava li baitar. I lo gamar gzera shava misbraim nami. Lo. So the Gemara says, well, where's Rabbi Eliezer stand in terms of what we just did together? Meaning the balancing of giluach and hashchata. Where according to the Tanna Kamma, we balanced the two of them. And basically what we crunched both of those descriptions and we came out with a razor. Does Rabbi Eliezer do that or does not do that? And if he doesn't do that, so then not only should tweezers be prohibited, but scissors also should be prohibited. So Gamar Gzereshava Kasavar Hani Nami Gilua Chavde. So the Gemara says, well, what he's of the opinion is that he makes a Gzereshava like we just did. In other words, it has to be both shaving and a destructive action. So certainly the tweezers or whatever these items are, they're certainly destructive, and he maintains it also qualifies as shaving. Now, difficult to understand, difficult for me to explain how these things represent shaving, in other words, it really gets to a definitional issue of what is shaving. Okay, so, I feel like we're all together on this. I certainly have like a general sense of shaving being, going across the skin with a blade or with a scissor. But, I guess Rabbi Eliezer, has a different formulation of what shaving, what the definition of shaving is. Continuing in the Mishnah. Okay, so far we are going over, it's a survey, like I mentioned yesterday. The Mishnayos over here it's not exhaustive. We're not going over all the lavim in the Torah. There are many lavim in the Torah that one's going to be subject to Malkus to. What we're doing over here in these Mishnayos in the third parak of Malkus is we're just basically taking a survey of various lavim in the Torah. I borrowed from the Rashi in the beginning of this parak. Yesterday, I'm going to say it again now as we go into another Mishnah. Perhaps the selection of lavim that are brought down in this parak simply present various chidushim that we may not have known had they not been here and been open for discussion. So that's why the Mishnah over here chooses these various lavim as they need a little bit more amplification, a little more explanation. Hakosif ksuvas ka'aka, so writing a tattoo on your skin. So basically getting a tattoo, one of the lavim in the Torah, and one is going to be subject to Malkus if one gets a tattoo. So at what point in time is a person going to be subject to the Malkus? So he's got to do two things in order to be subject to this Malkus. One is that he's got to ink, and two, he's got to cut. Meaning, you're not talking to the right person in terms of knowledge of tattoos. So, but here's a little that I know. It involves a two-step process. It involves cutting, and it involves then inserting dye or ink underneath the skin so that it stays there permanently. Interesting, by the way, the Rivan writes in the Mishnah, I'll read it inside. So, kosif tchila al basar b'samo b'sikr v'achakach mekake al basar b'machir o b'sakin. So the Rivan has the order, first you insert the ink, and then you cut so that the ink can go subcutaneous, below the skin. I don't know. Full admission. I don't think that's the order that's done nowadays. I think first they cut and then they ink. I think so. I don't know. But anyway, but the Rivan writes that first they ink and then they cut. V'nichnas aseva bein ha'or labasar v'nir bo kol hayamim. And as a result of that, it remains there permanently. Okay. V'asar lichtov shum ksiva ba'olam abasar b'inyan zeh shekach zeres hakasav. Now the Rivan over here writes that, and why? Why can't you do it? Because the Torah says you can't do it. Just interesting. The Rambam files it under the category of it's a form of Avodah Zarah. Lemaisa, I don't know if there'd be a difference between filing it under Avodah Zarah or like the Rivan writes over here. It's a Zeres HaKasav. I mean, the Torah just simply says don't do it. In either event, it's Aser. Okay, but that is obviously there's much more to explore in that area. Back to our Mishnah. So, in order to violate the Isser Torah of putting a tattoo, so there has to be a cutting and there has to be an application of ink. Using some sort of applicator or your hand or anything that makes a permanent impression. So the way we have it in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda quotes in the name of Rabbi Shimon that one will not be violating this Isser in the Torah until it's a permanent tattoo and it is shame. Seemingly shame Hashem.
Shame on the forehead?
Well, stay tuned because the Gemara is going to clarify this line of the Mishnah. Right now that's how we have it in the Mishnah. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to really clarify this point. The Torah says that you're not allowed to put a tattoo on your body. Ani Hashem. Now, again, the simple reading of the Mishnah, but as we go through the Gemara, it will not be correct. But the simple reading of the Mishnah is, well, you see how the Pasuk reads? You can't put a tattoo saying the words Ani Hashem. That's not the right reading of the Mishnah. That's not the right reading of the Pasuk. But that seems to be what the Mishnah is indicating. Stay tuned because we get to the Gemara. We'll clarify that point. Amalei Rav Achabre de Rav Le Ravashi Ad Yichtov Ani Hashem Mamish. So it's you're writing Ani Hashem, meaning literally that's what you're writing. So Amalei Lo, he says no, you're not. No, in other words, that's not what he meant. So Kiditni Bar Kafare Einochayv Ashi Yichtov Shem Avodas Kochavim. Oh no, what it means is that you're writing the name of an Avodah Zarah. So it's not that you're tattooing God's name, which in of itself is Aser, but in other words, but according to Rabbi Shimon, the Lav and Malchus only come about when you tattoo an Avodah Zarah's name. Right, the Ani Hashem is not what you're writing. The Ani Hashem means that you wrote some other name of some other God on your skin, and that's when you violate the formal Isser Torah, when you write the name of an idolatry on your skin. Now, mind you, by the way, in the Mishnah, that's Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, meaning that's not the Tanakhama. Tanakhama is of the opinion that as long as you write anything, you're going to be subject to the Malkus. So what we've done successfully now is explain Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is quoted as saying, you have to write the Ani Hashem, but we just clarified. That's not what he meant. What he meant is you wrote the name of another God on your skin, then and only then do you get Malkus. But again, the Tanakhama argues on Rabbi Shimon, and the Tanakhama says you're going to get Malkus for writing anything. Now, even there, by the way, there's a subsequent discussion. When we say anything, do we mean to say, like, literally anything, a line, just even a line? So there are those who are of the opinion that it has to be something meaningful, meaning it has to be a word, a letter, a picture. But just a line in of itself may not be a violation of the Torah. Again, I'm not. All I'm saying is that there is a range of position in that regard. And again, that actually plays out a lot of halacha lemaisa, because and this is not psak. This is just just to see where this debate goes. Right, permanent makeup. So what basically you're doing is you're drawing lines. They're not words. It's not a picture. You're just drawing lines. So some are more lenient in this regard because the tattooing issue is only for letters and pictures. If they're just lines, so there are those who are makel. Again, not for me, not for our discussion, but just certainly something interesting in this regard. Amar of Makia, Amar of Ada Baava, Aso Laladim Shitin Efer Mikla Agabe Makaso. So let's say you have a wound. An open wound, and you want to heal it. And back then, so they used to apply ash. So he says there's a problem with that, because basically what you did is you made a tattoo, meaning you have an open wound, and now you're going to put ash over there. And the ash, although it may be therapeutic towards the wound, but it's going to leave a permanent mark over there. And mimnation nears kiksuvas kaka. So it looks like you're making a tattoo. So therefore, he says it is to be avoided. One should not do that. Now, okay. So the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, "Amar Rav Nachman Bereid Rav Ika Shpod Shvachos V'Gumos Rav Malkiel." Blor is for mikla vigvina Rav Malkiya. The Gemara now references six halachas over here. These six halachas that we're describing, the Gemara just simply is looking for proper proper attribution. Which Amara said which of these statements? Now, there are six statements in total, and there are two Amaras with almost identical names. There's Rav Malkiya with a Vav at the end, and Rav Malkiya with an Aleph at the end. And so what Rav Nachman Bar Rav Ika is doing is accounting, and basically the halachas of the spit, the midwives, and the guma, and the whole, so that's Rav Malkiya. Blaris, a certain hairstyle, Efer Mikla, the ashes, and Vina and cheese, that's Rav Malkiya. I'm not going to go through the six halachas right now. You see the Rivan over here, four. He goes through every one of them. He explains each one of them. But for our purposes right now, just all we need to know, I mean, it'd be nice if we knew all six right now, but the one that we're focusing on is on Efer Mikla. So it says the Efer Mikla halacha, that is coming from Rav Malkiya, with the Aleph at the end. Rav Papa Amar Masnisa 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 Rav Malkiya and Shmaitata Rav Malkiya. So Rav Papa says, no, a little bit differently. Anything that is explaining either a Mishnah or a Braisa, that's Rav Malkiya with an Aleph. Anything which is just a statement of an Amora, that's a Shmaitata, so that's Rav Malkiya. Vistimanchan, he says, and the mnemonic to help you remember this is Masnisa Makasa. The mnemonic is that Mishnah is the king, or to say it more correct, Mishnah is the queen. But still, the point being is that the Masnisa ends with an Aleph, Makasa ends with an Aleph, so it's a mnemonic to help you remember that at least according to Rav Papa, the statements that are attributed to Rav Malkiya are statements that have to do with Mishnayos and Braisos. May benayu kebenayu shvachos. Now the difference between Rav Papa's version and Rav Nachman's version is going to be shvachos. Shvachos was qualifying the Mishnah, that's over there in Ksuvos. Again, I know I didn't go through the other five, but for now, suffice to say, that's a Mishnah. So according to Rav Papa, that would be Malkiya, whereas according to Rav Nachman, that would be Malkiya. Okay. Rabibi Barabai kapid afilo aribda de kusilsa. Rabibi Barabai was so careful about not putting ashes that even after bloodletting, bloodletting required a small little puncture in order to bloodlet, and after that was over, so obviously there was still an opening in the skin, and so to put ashes over there would be a problem because that would be, again, like ksuvas kaka. Rav Ashi Amar Komakum Sheisha Maka Makaso Mochiach Alav. Rav Ashi disagrees. He says, look, if there's a wound there and ashes are placed over there, so it's not a violation of the Torah. Again, it could be that it's not a violation because it wasn't your intent, because it's not a picture, it's not a letter. But anyway, aside from all that, it's not a violation of the Torah. And what are you worried about over here? Marasayan? Meaning, you see the wound, you see the ashes. People understand that you put the ashes there only because it's a result of the wound. And therefore, Rav Ashi says that There is no reason to be concerned in such a case. Okay, Mishnah. We're on the very bottom of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, and we're continuing now with a Mishnah Nazir Shayashosayim Kolayom Einu Chayv Ela Acha. So you have a Nazir. Obviously, Nazir has accepted upon himself Nazirus, which has three prohibitions now that he has taken upon himself: not to cut his hair, not to drink wine or any grape product, and not to come into contact with a mace. So there's a Nazir, and he's accepted now as Nazirus, and there he is drinking wine. And so wakes up in the morning, and he hits the bottle early. And before doing so, you have a pair of witnesses, going over to the house, saying, you shouldn't be doing it. It's a terrible habit, and worse off right now, you're a Nazir, it's just Asra Minotaur for you to drink the wine, and you can't do it. So he received Asra, and he's Mekabel the Asra, and he accepted it. Yeah, you're right, I shouldn't do it. And then he goes ahead and he drinks it. Now, Afal Pekin, I accept, I don't care. I don't care what the consequences. I'm going to drink it anyway. And he drinks and he drinks and he drinks and, oh, kola yom kulo. And the whole day he's drinking. So, ain't a chayv al achas. Because he got one asras, he's only going to get one set of malchus. Right? We quoted this Mishnah yesterday, second day in a row, recording the Mishnah. Amr lo al tishta, but who shows the chayv al achas v'achas. However, the scene is almost comedic, where the witnesses are there, and right before every drink, the witnesses say to him, don't do it. It's a lav in the Torah. Right, you understand? He says, yep, I understand. And then, knocks down a drink of wine. And then we go round two and round three, and we keep doing this again and again. So he's going to receive malchus for everyone. The hasras, the warnings that he receives, are breaking up every action. So now he's receiving malchus for every action. Hayim etam la mesim kol yom in chayv al achas. Amar la titama titama v'metam chayv kol achas v'achas. So the Mishnah gives another example, and here it's Tumalames. He goes into the cemetery, he comes out, and again, if he received only one warning, that's only one set of Malkus. If every time he comes in and out, he receives a warning for each one, Malkus for each one. And the third example, okay, we're covering now all three sermons of the Nazir. You know, obviously, to go more in depth into the Mishnah, why did the Mishnah have to give out all three examples? Why wasn't one example enough? Good question. Requires further analysis. We continue in the Mishnah. Hayu levush beklaim. I'm sorry, just finish the Mishnah. Hayu levush beklaim kol hayom enochayv ela achas. Let's say he puts on a garment of woolen linen. So, and he wears it all day. With one warning, he's only going to get one set of makos. Amar lo al tibash al tibash v'uposhev lovesh chayv kol achas v'achas. But let's say, takes his coat off, right, let's start with the coat off. Coat is off. The witnesses say, hey, that's Shatnez, that coat. He's like, I know. And he puts it on. And then he takes it off. And then again, round two and round three with a warning every time. So he's going to get Malkus for every time. Where? Where? Lo Silbash. The Torah says, don't wear. Lo Vesh. Yes.
Yeah.
Right, excellent. In other words, it's not a... Right? Excellent point. In other words, he doesn't have a new tumah on him, even though, right, he is exposing to tumah, even though there's no tumah on him. It's an excellent point. And it sounds simple pshat in the Mishnah is that it's still going to be subject to a set of malchus. But your point is excellent. Okay. Yesh charish telem echad v'chayv alav mishum shmon alavim. Now, here is a classic Mishnah in which let's look at one action where that one action can represent eight lav in the Torah. Now, the fundamental question to ask over here is, right, Einis or Chal Alisser. I mean, once the Torah already provides one prohibition, so that you don't stockpile other Isurim on top of it. And in fact, not only do you not stockpile, there's no room for another Isur to fall on top of it. Meaning, once this item is prohibited, that's it. There may be other Isurim introduced, but they don't. There's nowhere for the other Isur to land. There's no room for other Isurim. So yes, that's the right question to ask. That requires analysis. I'm not ignoring the issue. I'm just simply noting that the Mishnah doesn't deal with it. It's a later discussion. Not even the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't deal with it, but it's a later discussion. But it definitely needs attention. In the meantime, however, basically we're looking at the act of plowing. How can plowing be a separate Isurim? Funny you should ask. The Mishnah tells us, Yesh Charish Tel Mecha V'chayv Alav Mishum Shmon Alavim. HaCharish B'Shur V'Chamor. So, Issa number one. So, you took two different animals, and you plowed with the two different animals. Interesting that the Mishnah chooses Shur V'Chamor. Two different animals. One, Shur is a kosher animal. Chamor is a non-kosher animal. The Rambam's opinion is that the only time when a person violates plowing with two different animals is where one is kosher, one is not kosher. If they're both kosher animals, but they just happen to be two different animals, so according to the Rambam, that's not an Isser in the Torah. Okay, and certainly the Rambam is supported by a Mishnah like this, where the Mishnah seemingly is choosing by design a kosher and non-kosher animal. V'hein mukdashin, and the animals belong to Hekesh, which means that now there's an Isser in the Torah of being moa b'hekesh, you're not allowed to misappropriate something that belongs to Hekesh. Uveklai b'kerem, and also, the field itself is a cross between grape seeds and other seeds that are being planted over there. Uvishvis, it's during the sabbatical year where you're not allowed to plow. V'yomtov, it also happens to be yomtov where you're not allowed to plow. V'kohen, v'nazir bebeis atumah. It also happens to be that it's a cemetery, and the person is both a kohen and he's a nazir. That's two more isurim. Okay, you've been keeping score, so that has now been eight Isurim in which the person is doing in this one act of plowing. So Chananya ben Chachinai omer af alovish kolayim. Chananya ben Chachinai says, well, I can tack on another lav, and that is that he's wearing kolayim in the process. So Amru lo, ain't no Hashem. So the Chachamim say to Chananya, not relevant, meaning we're looking for Isurim in the act of plowing. Yeah, we could tack on other prohibitions on the person, but that's not the game over here. I don't mean.
He wasn't a skull.
Right, right, exactly. I don't mean game, but I'm saying, but that's not, the goal over here is to look for isurim in the act of plowing. So that's what we're looking for. So Amar lahem afa nazir lohu Hashem. So his counter argument is, well, nazir also, meaning, and when he says nazir, he means nazir and kohen. Meaning that's not relevant to the act of plowing. That it happens to be that he's a nazir and kohen, and he's on the base tumah, and he's over a cemetery. But that's not inherent in the act of plowing. And seemingly he's making an excellent counter argument to the chachamim. We'll touch on this later. Let's just quickly just run through the first discussion of the Gemara. So skipping the parentheses, afilo machlus amosis umotzi beis yad unkalu shalom. So the we gave a number of examples of multiple isurim in the Mishnah. The nazir, you know, knocking down a cup after cup, and the guy wearing kalayim, where he takes it off and puts it back on, and takes it off, puts it back on again. On this point of the kalayim, the Gemara over here just simply highlights that he doesn't have to take off the whole garment. It would be sufficient if he just takes off a sleeve and puts it back in again. That is a violation of yilbash, of wearing. So afilo machnus amotzi beis yad gun kali shalo machve rav achi brei ravika yuli v'afuke. And again, Rav Achi made a demonstration. These demonstrations today, I'm telling you, they'd be so much better, you know, if we were 1700 years ago. But he showed everyone, take the sleeve in, take the sleeve out. You know, I feel like I think I can do this demonstration. This one I think I can handle. The showing the corners of the face, I couldn't handle that one. I simply don't know. But anyway, Rav Ashi Omer afilo sha'ala kedei lisho v'lo v'shchayev. Now Rav Ashi says a tremendous chiddush, and that is as follows. Even for multiple wearing of shatnez, it does not mean that you actually have to take it off. It doesn't even mean that you have to take out a sleeve and put it back in again. As long as you're wearing it with enough time to take it off and put it back on again, and you get warned in that interim, so you're going to get tacked on another set of malchus. Now, as I mentioned, that's a big chiddush. Why is it such a big chiddush? Because you get malchus when? When you do a maisa, when you do an action. So here, you put it on the first time, that's an action. And then you refuse to take it off, and someone says to you, hey, you're wearing shatnez, don't do that. I know, I was already warned before, thank you very much. But okay, I'll take your warning also. So he got warned again. And now what Rav Ashi's teaching us is that as long as there's enough time for him to take it off and put it back on again, so he's going to get another set of malchus. That's a tremendous chiddush. He didn't do a maisa. So some Rishonim are of the opinion, Tosos says this, is that, well, what we're going to do is we're going to take his original action and we're going to apply it to this point in time. I know that's a big chiddush, but you have to explain Rav Ashi, meaning Rav Ashi clearly maintains that he's going to get law for this. Where's the maisa? So I know it's a big chiddush, so really, you know, the Rav Ashi saying the big chiddush, all we're doing now is just trying to explain the chiddush. So Tosu says, so that's what we're doing. We're taking the original action, and because there was enough time to take it off and put it back on again, so we take the original action and we apply it to now. And we keep doing that with every warning that he gets. Okay, that's one way to explain Rav Ashi. Okay, we're going to pause over here. Tomorrow we start with the Charisha, Rav Yanai. Okay, we continue with that with tomorrow.